Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. 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 Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, March 28, 2018. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello, good to be here.
And Michael Kelly joins us as well.
Good evening, everyone. Always happy to be here.
I'd like to welcome those joining us live as well as those listening to the archive. We appreciate you being with us and spending time with us. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit as well as to explore science and spirituality. And we have a number of educational programs since that's our primary mission is education. And some of our programs include EmpoweredRecovery.com, which offers help for the friends and family of alcoholics and addicts, Paranexus.org, an association of anomalous researchers, MetaphysicsInstitute.org, that offers bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees in a variety of different topics, including metaphysical science, spiritual counseling, life coaching, holistic healing, hypnosis, paranormal science, ufology, and other areas. And also Thomas Francis University at tfuniversity.org that offers standalone metaphysical courses and degrees. Now, we ordinarily read our 9 abbreviated principles of belief, and I'd like to do something a little bit different for the coming 9 weeks or so. I'd like to read each one. I'm going to take one a week and just comment briefly on it. And so you can always, of course, go read all of our principles of belief in their expanded form at our website, which is metaphysicalhumanism.org. But tonight I want to talk about the first one, the first principle of belief, which is do no harm, do right. Now, these two principles complement each other. They go together. There's two, but they go together. For example, it's not always enough to just do no harm. We need to take it a step further and do right, do the right thing, do the kind thing. This is closely linked to paying it forward. And that is the work that metaphysical humanists do. That's our work. That's what we do. We pay it forward. We do the right thing. We do no harm, of course, but we also do right. And we focus on the doing right. And, you know, we lighten the load. We give the encouraging word and we pay it forward whenever we can. And we look for ways to do that. And that, everyone, is a healthy work to be involved in. So bear that in mind, especially if you're a member of ICMH Church, you know, metaphysical humanist. Bear that in mind. Do no harm, but do right. Pay it forward. That's the work. Look for ways each day. They can be small things. They can be big things. You know, just look for ways to help others as you are able to do so. Now tonight, we're going to talk about how to deal with grief. And grief can take different forms and can be for different things. And since Michael chose our topic tonight, he's going to start us off.
Well, in thinking about tonight's topic of discussion, I was drawn to the topic of grief because it's been something that's been somewhat pervasive in my life recently. If it's not been personal with my grandmother's recent passing, it's been with people that I know and clients that have been going through loss. And it's something.
Your mom.
What's that?
Your mom.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that one was a long term. And it's been a while now, and it's actually going to be a great example, I think, later too, in kind of grief and how it plays out over time. But one thing that I've always found comforting about it is that grief is a universal to all humans. It's part of our natural process, and it's something that in stressful, trying times and times of loss, it brings a lot of people together because it's a shared experience. And there's some good that comes from that. And every process that humans go through has a real benefit. But grief, as you mentioned earlier, isn't also just about the loss of a loved one in death. It could be any kind of loss. It could be the end of a relationship. It could be, they've gone, if people have military families, you grieve the absence of your loved one who's in a, combat situation, and there's a lot of stress to that. And that's all grief. And because this is such a universal, kind of an integral thing to being human, I think it's just ripe for conversation and discussion. And with that, I'll turn it over to the crew.
Dr. Hunter, any comments?
Oh, well, grief's a big topic. It really is.
Narrow it down.
Narrowing it down, I think when people think about grief, you nailed it, Michael, to say that usually you think about a people, That would be friends, family, especially. But you're right, there's all kinds of grief. Anytime there's a significant change in our life, there's a transition. Mm-hmm. And the transition brings grief. And there are various stages to that. And I think if we can recognize that that's what we're going through, we can kind of not resist it so much, but just kind of say, well, this is going to be a ride. And to me, it's about observing the emotions, observing, because everything is different. Grief will not be the same way twice. You can have many different changes, but you'll never grieve the same way because each has its own significance in your life. And the same for people. I mean, I've said goodbye to a lot of people in my life, but there's a handful who are really deeply, I still think about them and I still grieve. And it's 30, 40 years later. So there's certain levels of significance, whether it's people or experiences, that we internalize this. And the thing is, it's not to forget, and I think that's the biggest thing, that people make is trying to let it go, move on, move forward. It's to remember and integrate that into our experience as we move forward.
Good points. And since you brought that up, I'll go ahead and jump in on, because that's the point I wanted to bring up at some point. Grief is a process. It's a natural process. And like you said, a lot of times we just want to get past it. Well, we need to let it run its course. And whatever that means for whatever loss you've experienced, it can be an intense loss, for example, the loss of a loved one, or it can be a loss of a career or something that you enjoyed doing but you're no longer doing, anything like that. But especially when it comes to a significant loss, for example, a loved one, you need to let it have that process, and it takes time, and you need to be okay with that because it's going to do it anyway. So here's what you do. Obviously, right after a significant loss, it's going to be the heaviest, so you're going to grieve the most immediately thereafter, and then it will just slowly dissipate. The intensity of it will dissipate over time. That's just what happens. But here's what you do. When you feel that grief coming on, and it can come on without notice, something happens and it just strikes a nerve or whatever, and you just, you could even break out in tears or something. So it can be unexpected. And if that happens, you excuse yourself if you're with people and you go and you have 5 or 10 minutes, whatever you need, and you feel it for all it's worth. You cry every tear you got to cry. Feel it and experience it. And after a little bit, whatever's right, whatever time frame is right, it could be, and I'm suggesting keeping it on the shorter side, then change the channel, pick yourself up and move on, because you're going to have another opportunity, many other opportunities to do it. And so, you get compose yourself and you get going again. And then the next time it comes up, you do the same thing. You find your privacy or whatever you need to do, and you experience it for all it's worth. You cry every tear you got to cry, and then you set it aside and you continue on, and you just do that. But don't try to stifle it. You know, don't try to bury it, because it's going to come out in one way or another. Any comments?
Well, I agree to that very much. I think that there needs to be there needs to be a balance. You need to feel the emotion, give it its due time, and be able to move on. You cut it too short, it's not healthy, because you're repressing emotion that will eventually bubble out in worse ways. Although, if you stoke the flames too much, then you're wallowing in the grief, and that's unhealthy as well. There's always going to be a balance to life in most things, and this is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
But everything has its time, and everything has its course.
And so, you know, if our listeners in the chat room have any specific questions on grief, please don't hesitate to type them in. But do you have thoughts on? Go ahead.
Well, and I was just going to say, we're talking a lot about the grieving process, and we're talking about how people perceive it. And, you know, there's been some comments in chat about really society. Dr. Tabitha said that she feels that as a society, she thinks that we don't allow for a period of healthy grieving because we're always on the go. And I think that's true for a lot of people. And I also think that a lot of people have misconceptions about grief. They think that there's an order to it. There's a process to it, or a script. And there's not. There's a very famous model by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the five stages of grief, of course, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. And, you know, those are the five stages, and everybody tends to perceive them as going in sequential order. And they might think, well, if I'm not, you know, feeling these things, is that wrong? If I'm not feeling depressed, is that wrong? I mean, people define depression differently. But it should be pointed out that those stages are not linear. They're not a progression, and people don't always experience all five. And there's no, like Dr. Hunter said earlier, there's no script. There's no two grieving processes that are the same. And you have to go with your feelings, and you have to feel them, and you have to go through the process. You can't let others tell you what to do and how you should grieve.
Good point.
You know, I'm a delayed processor myself.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those who's really good in an emergency or crisis or event. And something happens, I take care of it. And I don't always respond the way other people think I should. But that's because I'm managing my emotions. That I'm a delayed processor, and I'll process in my due time. So there's criticism both ways about people who completely lose it and then wallow in that emotion and it gets control of them. And then there's the other way where I think I kind of am, where I say, well, I'll take care of this as I need to. And if that takes me, well, it doesn't matter how long it's going to take me. I'll just do it in my own time, because I'm very private about pain. I'm very private about emotional struggles. And that's because I came from a very emotionally volatile childhood and my early years. And I wanted to be the manager of my emotions. I didn't want to behave that way. So as part of my own kind of self-discipline, it's not to let my emotions get away with me. Mm-hmm. Now, I see a couple of comments in there. Yes, I appreciate that. I'm not alone then. Other people saying me too.
I agree. In the same way.
Yeah. It just, I have often walked away from a conversation and somebody says, well, you're not going to talk to me. And I say, look, I need to process emotionally. I don't like, I want to be absolutely responsible for what I say and what I do. So when I have had an emotional time, I walk away, think about it, and work through my own stuff, and then I can come back and have a reasonable conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way I have tailored myself also to be as stable as possible. So when it comes to emotional control, this is like that something I've shared with a lot of people, that, and I've done it with myself, especially if I'm by myself. In the grief period where you feel that well of emotion, I just say, okay, here it comes. So I let it go. And it's got 10 minutes. And I look at the watch. I look at my clock. I look at whatever. 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. And if it's still there in 10 minutes, I say, go, you got another 5. And usually then I can say to myself, okay, go do what you need to do. And it might come up again later. But at least I'm the manager. I'm the boss of me. Now, if it does, if I have been emotional and things are really getting the better of me, I just go back to bed. Because I think that there's something to be said for our biochemical system when things flare up. And then it needs to level out. So even if you're not sleeping, it's to let the body just be horizontal, let the biochemical system just settle down, take a breath, get up, and start again. And that's, I've just shared that with people to say, you be the manager of emotions, don't let your emotions control you.
Good points.
There's one other kind of exercise I suggest to people that now that I'm kind of on a roll for a minute, is if there's been a great loss of somebody you love in your life, the tendency then is to want to be with them or not feel separate from them. And this is where we call that, like, you're losing a piece of your spirit. So the exercise is to picture that somebody in your mind and call your own name out loud. And actually feel the vibration of that. Hear the sound of your own name and call your spirit back. Even if there's things from your past or past experiences or childhood trauma, visualize that in your mind. You don't have to relive it. Just visualize it and call yourself back. And, you know, I say this too because there's a comment in the chat, and I won't say who, but grieving the inner child. Well, visualize yourself as a child, have it, you know, like look at her, and then call your spirit back, like bring her up to where you are in the present moment so that you're more whole. It's kind of, I see us as fragmented when we can't get centered. So call your name back, get back into your body, be grounded. But those fragments that are floating around the universe, bring them back. That's just a suggestion.
That was an outstanding suggestion. That was completely worth the price of this broadcast in and of itself.
Well, thank you.
Excellent.
Well, great
excellent
points.
Yeah. Michael, any comments?
Well, I think it's, I love that Dr. Hunter brought up the fact that it's a biochemical reaction as well, because it absolutely is. It's a spiritual process, grieving. It's a psychological process, and it's a physical, chemical process. It's all of them. And I completely agree with that. I've always felt the notion of grieving is almost that, you know, when we have that kind of bond and relationship with someone, you know, I guess it's might be semantics. It could either be go either way, but you know, a bit of them resides with you in your spirit and soul. And when it's gone, you know, that's the process we're going through is its absence. And, I would say that when we're talking about how, you know, some people don't always appreciate the ways with which people deal with grief, I use humor to deal with everything. I use it to, you know, try to make a stressful situation seem lighter. I use it to try to just deal with everyday life and just moving through it, keep it interesting, but I'd use it for grief. I use humor to go through that process. It's my way. And I've always tried to be tactful. I've always tried to read people and kind of be aware of what might offend some. But, you know, myself, I've used humor that might be considered dark by some, but it's my way of processing. And after my mother died, which has been, 13 years now, and, you know, in the preceding years after, I used humor all the time to deal with it. You know, there was a few years after she had passed. You know, there's in pop culture and just joking around, especially when you're young, there's a lot of, you know, your mama jokes. They would throw them around, and so somebody would say one towards me, joking in jest, and And then I would get very serious, and I would say, I can't believe you brought that up. My mother's dead. And the reaction would amuse me to no end. And some people didn't get it, but just that's one of the ways I dealt with it, morose as it may be. And I would let him in on the joke, and then we'd all laugh, and it would be fine. But I'd say, you know, it's just kind of my way. It's not a big deal. I'm just messing with you. But the point being, some people can look at that and see it as being dark and not appropriate, but for me, it was just my way of dealing with it, of making it light and trying to process a dark situation.
Good points.
I think we have to remember that we're not grieving the one who's lost. We're grieving for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we have to get perspective. When somebody's left the earth, I'm happy for them. Like, and I mean that with all my heart. That's a freedom, that's a transition and experience. There's no loss to them, that's going to the next place where we came from. It's what we are dealing with here. So recognizing not to grieve for who's crossed, be actually joyful for that, and realize that our grief is our own. It's my pain, my thing. This is the way I deal with it, and, you know, I'm moving through it as best as possible. It's not about getting over it. It's, you know, and there's certain kinds of, like I said earlier, there's certain kinds of loss that you'll never, ever recover from, and that's got to be okay, too, you know, so that's just kind of wanted to throw that in there.
Well, let's talk about a couple of different things that are sort of related. One is, let's talk about loss of a loved one and how the philosophy that can ease that pain a little bit. And that will segue then into, especially if you are somebody who wants to comfort somebody who has lost somebody. So first of all, the hope. You know, we've talked about hope on this program many times, and you know, and I'm not going to get too long-winded on this, but when you really look at everything existentially, you know, when you look at the big picture here, it doesn't make any sense that we go nowhere when we die. It makes no sense whatsoever. And there's enough rational evidence to suggest that we move on to the next chapter or whatever's next. There's just too much. Okay, so let's just assume that's correct for the moment. That can bring comfort and hope. So if we lose somebody that we loved and a loved one, we need to remember that that's not the end. It's just they're on vacation, or, you know, we're just apart for a short time. And we'll have an opportunity to reconnect with them at some point on the other side. That can bring some comfort. It can bring a lot of comfort. I mean, that's the same thing that religions use. And, you know, and perhaps in that area, they're correct. You know, even though it's not going to necessarily be heaven, it's just going to be the next realm, the next chapter. And it's reasonable to conclude that that's where we'll meet up again. And that could even extend to animals and so forth. So there's hope in that, and there's rational proof for it. There's not objective proof for life after death, but there's rational, reasonable proof for life after death. So that can bring some comfort. And so we want to remember that if we're ever trying to comfort somebody who's lost a loved one. Maybe you're an ICMH-ordained minister, and part of your ministry is helping others. You know, that's part of paying it forward, too. And sometimes to comfort other people, you just need to just be with them. And you may, you know, there's, what are you going to say? I mean, you can, at the right moment, you might bring up the hope. You'll have a chance to reunite with them. This is just a vacation. It's just a short time away, but you'll connect again. So you might say that, but a lot of times it's just being with them, being close and just sitting with them is all that is necessary. And that's supportive. So, I mean, I had one of my graduate students call me up the other day, and there was a woman who had been in hospice, and he'd been ministering to her, you know, in terms of helping her and encouraging her and all that. And she called him up and said she felt like the day was the day she was going to check out, and she wanted him to come over. And, you know, he called me. What do I tell her? You know, what do I say? And I told him just what I told everyone here. It's just, I mean, what can you say? There's not a whole lot, you know, especially to somebody who's dying. And of course, it's related, but it's not exactly the same thing as grief, but they're dying. What are you going to say to them? Well, bring up that hope, you know, encourage them, be with them. But the same is true for the loved ones of a person who might be terminal, you know, that be with them. So hopefully some of these suggestions will be of value to you. Any concluding comments on this topic?
Well, I might say that people are afraid of pain. Mm-hmm. And not only are they afraid of their own pain, but they're more afraid of somebody else's, because it's going to remind them of their own pain. It's an interesting thing how we as a society have been taught to avert ourselves from pain. And it's going to hurt. It's going to suck. And it's one thing we have to be really clear is to be fair enough to say to somebody, I don't know how that feels. And honestly, I hope I never do. Yeah. But I'm here for you, and what can I do? And again, as you say, just being there. I've had far too many experiences in my life, I'm afraid, you know, especially. I think that somebody losing a child is the most horrendous that anyone could experience. And I've had friends to lose children. And I have to say, oh, my God, that sucks. This just sucks. And, you know, we don't need to say any more than that in those moments. I've known people who lost all their friends because their child died. It's because nobody knows how to deal with the pain. Mm-hmm. They don't know what to say. And I am one who, I'll still remember the anniversary of so-and-so's death, and I'll call up the mom and say, I'm thinking of you today. You see, and that brings a comfort to people that they're not the only one remembering their child. I remember your child, and I remember the impact that that child had on the planet. And sometimes we'll have a talk, sometimes we don't need to. It's the acknowledgement. So first, number one, if it's a situation that you haven't had the experience, don't say you understand, because you don't. Yeah. And the other is just allow yourself to embrace pain. Pain is part of life, and we're all going to hurt, and we're all going to go through periods of pain. Ride it out. I always say, like, oh, this is going to be a ride. You know? And just be human, because that's all part of the life's walk. So I just wanted to throw that in there.
I'd like to recognize a couple of comments in the chat room, too. Fran put, you know, in terms of comforting those who are losing or lost loved ones, you know, it's not an ending, but another beginning. I mean, how much better can you put it? And that's exactly right. It's not an ending. It's just another beginning. It's, you know, a new chapter. You know, one chapter closes, one door closes, another one opens, so to speak. Beautifully put. Michael mentioned in the chat room, we're empathetic creatures, I believe, that when people are together, they're helping and sharing an emotional burden. I'm beginning to think that most people can actually feel a sort of telepathic empathy of emotion and feeling. And I base that only on personal observations. But I think that's true. And that's true with us. We're all connected together. We're all connected. And we're connected through global consciousness, collective consciousness. And so just being with somebody, supportive, that energy is transferring. It's there. You're connected already to them, but you're now connected in a little more intense way, and that brings comfort. So, excellent comments. Mm-hmm. Great points, and I hope this has helped those who may be in need for it. All right, so let's move on to our inner oracle card deck, and the inner oracle cards are simply a deck of 54 cards and several suites.
You have the Michael.
Yeah, I got Michael.
How did I get
anyway,
that?
Anyway, several suits. Yeah. Anyway, well, I used to say it too, and I had, it's okay.
You mess up
I
one time, and you get labeled for life.
I know.
Or five, or whatever it was. I don't know.
Anyway, but the Inner Oracle cards are basically practical life skills and wisdom, and they're designed to get you thinking, and that's what they're about now. If you want a card, put your name in the chat room, and I have something a little twist on this. If anybody's game, and I'm talking about our listeners, if you happen to have a deck of the Inner Oracle cards and you would like to pull a card for us or anyone, just put it in the chat room and we'll pull that card and read the information. See what happens. All right, Dr. Hunter, take it away.
Well, we have Errol up first, and I pulled number 11. It's awareness. And this is in the existential suit. I had to do that.
Yeah, I would. I don't blame you. I would do it too.
Every human being has a responsibility to increase their awareness for fulfillment and peaceful coexistence. People generally do the best they can according to their current level of awareness, knowledge, experience, and resources. This card may indicate that an increased awareness is in some area is needed. Continue to increase your awareness of self and others through observation, acquired knowledge, and a positive attitude. I think that just means that you're coming into something new, Errol. Just, keep your feelers up. Interesting. So we have Dr. Tabitha next. Michael, maybe you'd like to pull one for Tabitha.
All right. And Dr. Tabby, I have pulled number 32, sympathy and empathy, which is on point.
Mm-hmm.
Mercy is compassion in action and fulfills a kind of act of paying it forward. Sympathy, or sensitivity for another's plight, and empathy, relating to another's plight, each requires need, compassion, and action to fulfill a soul's need to explore, investigate, and educate. Always extend the benefit of the doubt until there is no longer reason to do so.
Interesting.
Yep.
Good one. Mm-hmm. Now, we just to push the pause button here for a minute, Dr. Tabitha has volunteered to pull a card for someone. Fran did pull a card.
They also want a card.
And then there's others who want a card. So I'm going to go ahead and pull one for Fran. And perhaps, Dr. Tabitha, you can pull one for, we have Dr. Jeff there. Would that be all right? I hope for Dr. Jeff. Maybe Tabitha, you could pull one for Jeff and then just put the number into the chat room and then we'll read it. So, Fran, I have for you continuity of life. Oh, well, isn't that a twist?
Things never cease to amaze me.
I know. Human consciousness transcends the physical body, allowing a new chapter of life to continue. Stability and peace is assured with continuity and the flow of day-to-day life. There is reason to hope for a favorable outcome in the face of adversity or a difficult situation. You are a living example of the continuity of life. Cherished values will continue to live and grow, and sometimes we must allow a current chapter to close so that a new chapter may begin. And we do send lots of light to you and your husband, and hopefully he's come through his surgery just fine like we anticipated he would, Fran. So this is the continuity of life and new chapters. Interesting. All right, Tabitha. Dr. Tabitha has pulled for Dr. Jeff number 20, deliberate intent. Now that sounds interesting. So, Dr. Jeff, this is for you. The simple act of intention registers your wants and desires with universal consciousness, which then sets energy in motion for their attainment. Deliberate intent is focusing your intent like a laser, causing you to become entangled with whatever it is that you desire. It's not magic. It requires effort. Focus on what you want, not on what you don't have. Release with patience. So I think you're focusing in on what you want to have, and you just picture it really clearly, and deliberate intent gets the energy moving. There you go. I like that one. Because I like them all. That's a good one, though, I think, for Dr. Jeff. So now to catch up here, what
Fran has pulled one for the evening, number 24, Truth.
Michael, maybe you want to read that one.
I would love to read that one. And then number 24, Truth. There are many ways to discover cosmic truth. It begins with knowing who you are and why you are who you are. This is your truth. Discovering cosmic truth involves further discovering the truths that are often concealed within a relationship or a life situation. Yet, the only truths kept secret are those we will not see. This is a time of deep introspection to intuitively gauge the way ahead. This card may indicate that there is truth in something or in a direction.
Yeah, the damn truth thing, hey?
Yeah.
They gotta face the truth.
Well, you know, that's tied to integrity, too.
Absolutely.
Your own truth. Living your own truth.
And, you know, there's a way that these all tie together. There's been a current through all of it. The discussion, the cards pulled, even the cards that Dr. Tabitha, Fran have pulled. And Dr. Jeff as well. I see here that he... looks like he pulled a card number 4 for the United States.
Well, I think he was saying for us. I think
it could have been. Yeah,
I think that's what he meant. And yeah, number 4 is past, present, future. Is that not appropriate?
Definitely.
Go ahead and read it if you like there, Michael. Yeah, he just said he just pulled one in general, so it was like for us for the evening.
Great.
Last guy, I didn't want to exclude you. All right, number 4, past, present, and future. The 3 universal laws of personal responsibility are: 1, you are accountable for your past, present, and future. 2, don't expect others to do for you what you can and should do for yourself. 3, don't do for others what they can and should do for themselves. Remember, present circumstances reflect past choices. Embrace responsibility and move forward with renewed vigor.
Good. Past, present, future.
But we could also, you know, take that within the context of our earlier discussion, too.
Yeah.
So they never cease to amaze me. All right, anyone else we've missed? Or we got everybody?
I
think we got everybody.
I think we got everyone, yeah.
Well, I just pulled one to end the evening, and it's gratitude.
Good.
And I'm going to read it so that we can all just take a breath for a moment and say to ourselves, gratitude is the joy one feels in the heart when the mind awakens to the gifts of life, no matter how seemingly small or insignificant. The truest essence of love lives within the feeling of gratitude, desiring a connection with all life while giving freely without want for return. Gratitude is benevolence that wants to give forward. Take a compliment with graciousness and good manners when gratitude is extended. Very good way to end the night.
I think so. Mm-hmm. I'll say that
Go ahead.
Enough gratitude is almost part of my process of grieving as well. It's when I've had I count some of my pets as loved ones because to me they are family and they do have that bond. And this has been across that board, but also with loved ones that when they passed, I've been immensely grateful that they were in my life in the first place. And
good attitude.
And I have tried to hope that I was a good impact on their life, be they a friend that I've lost or a friend that was a different species. And gratitude is just being thankful that they've been in your life, and that hopefully you're thankful that you might have been a positive impact in their life. That's a positive emotion that will help you deal with the process in a healthy way.
But, good points.
You know, I'd like to just share a quick little story, if I may. You were talking about pets, and my grandkids recently lost their cat, and it was very important for them to, and they're like, 10 and 7 at the time, and it's very important that they see the body. And, of course, the parents are right away, and I just was chill. I said, good idea. Let's go see the body. Let's go say goodbye. And so we made it a whole process because that's what they needed to experience. And it was just as important to them in their way as it is to us in our ways. So life through the eyes of a child, right? And it might seem a little macabre, but it wasn't at all. It was a closure. It was that validation that, it was credible, okay, that, But then we talked about the spirit and how the spirit transcends. And the most exciting part about this process for them afterward is how the cat was freed of pain. And we were so glad for Sage that Sage was free of that pain. And then we were really glad that Sage would visit. I said, did I just see Sage on the porch? Oh, Mama, we have seen Sage about 3 times in the last 2 days because his spirit would continue to visit. And my granddaughter says, it's so nice to see him when he's not suffering. And again, life through the eyes of the child. It's so magical. And pets are equally as important to us as human beings in, of course, different ways. But it's that connection that we feel. And that, to me, that universal connection of, we're all spiritual beings. So I just wanted to share that.
Good points. All right. Well, let's wrap things up. Any other points, Michael?
Oh, no. I think that was said beautifully.
Yeah, it was. All right, very good. So tonight we've talked about a lot of things related to dealing with and managing grief. Hope that you found some benefit to it. Thanks to everyone for tuning in and those listening to the archive. We appreciate your time. Thanks to Dr. Hunter. Thanks to Michael. And until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.